Yeah, it's about that time, you already know. Turn the speakers up, man, it's time to stop the show. John Tanner, Ryan Righteous, DJ Jeremiah. We bringing the heat, man, this joint be fire. Like, bruh, we in the field, we in the field. Bruh, we in the field, we in the field. Just put it in work, we raising the bar. You tuned in to the track stars.
Yeah, back in the field with the track stars, Ryan Righteous, Sean Tanner, DJ Jeremiah. This episode is sponsored by the new album from Nazarite. The Valley is up on pre-save right now, so make sure you go check it out. I had a chance to pre-screen it. It's really dope, and I think you'll think it's dope too. And then also, this is our last show of the year, y'all. So sad to say, man, that we won't see you guys until the end of January. We always come back at the end of January with a big show, so we're excited about all the different things that we're going to be doing to the studio and just to enhance this experience for you guys. We got a special guest in the building today. We got Justin Gibney in the building. He's got the new book out, Don't Let Nobody Turn You Around. We're going to talk to him about that, the AND campaign, all these great things. But first of all, we had a birthday in the building this week.
What's
Plain
up,
James.
Hey, man, and last time, two times I mentioned my birthday, the whole system shut down, so yeah. It came and it went, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And, man, it's been a crazy week. My wife was out of town this week, y'all, and had all four kids by myself, and I had activities every single night. But shout out, man, I just went out to Change Church. They do Christmas gift giveaways for families all across the city of Atlanta. I was out there. I saw 1K Few. I saw Dante Pride. And as I was leaving, the craziest thing, the guy and I was saying goodbye to this guy in the parking lot. He was doing car detail. And he was just like, if you headed to Track Stars, you're going to be late. And I was like, oh, snap. And he was just like, man, I love y'all's show. I love what y'all do. So that was a blessing, man. Shout out to you, Dwayne. If you're watching this, please DM me so that we can stay connected, bro. I love what you guys are doing at Change Church. It is a blessing. And then, Shania, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Last week was really dope. Sorry I missed the show. Yeah. But I was at a screening, so my mother and I filmed a short film at the top of the year.
Oh, word.
And then we had a screening for it last weekend, and it was a Q&A, and it was such a blessing.
Okay, very cool.
Such a blessing. That was really dope. And it was great because our experience on set was just so peaceful. Everything was at ease. And it wasn't until the Q&A we realized that all of the main parts of it, that we were all believers. Mm-hmm. So it was like, no wonder.
There you go.
You know? So it's always, you know, as an evangelist at the core, it's always fun for me to, y'all are going to show up, but y'all going to get some Jesus. So that day, they definitely all got Jesus, and we were all being witnesses on the stage, and it was just so beautiful. So that's been great. And then also on Instagram, I have the live devotion. I go live from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the mornings and the weekdays. Mm-hmm. And that has been amazing as well. So God has just been good. He's just been showing up, and we've all been blessed.
That's what's up. Jeremiah on the Kingdom Ox side, brother.
Yeah, man. Everything's been good with Kingdom Ox, man. We are now like 615 subscribers and stuff like that.
Wow, that's
and
great.
Like stuff has been going very well with that. So, man, shout out to them. I interview Will Thomas, director Will Thomas.
Yeah.
He will be his drop next week. And then also our Iron Sharpens Iron, Landry, he won again this week. So
man, yeah, he's fire, been, bro. Yeah, he's killing good. It.
Yeah, well, remember we interviewed him at Flavor Fest.
I can't wait for his interview to come out.
Yeah, man. So that's good stuff going on and stuff like that. So yeah, man, if you're on the lookout for it, go follow Kingdom Ox, you know, with DJ Jeremiah on YouTube, man. We do a lot of good stuff. So yeah, man.
Guys, me and Sean did the math this week. I did 16 independent artist spotlights in the month of November.
That's
crazy.
Oh, wow.
So that's been going well. I just premiered one this morning at 11 with DJ Noble.
Okay.
Legendary DJ Noble. Urban 1&1 Radio. He's got the Off the Grid podcast, so that was really cool. And then I put up the fall and winter prints for Righteous by Design.
Okay.
So I got on one of the hoodies today. I'm excited about what God is doing, man. It's really, really dope. So
dope, man.
Yeah. And Sean is out. He's out for his daughter's recital, but he has been engineering and helping us out. Got producer Jerry in the building.
Yay, hey, what's happening, y'all?
doing good, man. And then lastly, we are going to be at a movie premiere next week.
Yeah,
for,
no, the 21st. Yeah.
Next week. Mm-hmm. For Yesterday, Today, and Forever movie with Domingo Guyton, where we did the soundtrack. And we're going to be at the premiere on the 21st, and we're excited about that.
Yeah, man.
That's really dope. Miracle, what's going on?
You want to say something?
Hands emoji.
Hey, y'all. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And then also, we're excited. We got Justin Gibney in the building today. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be here.
Man, we're glad to be. Glad to have you here. I've been seeing you on the Fix radio show. That's one of our brothers. And then also you did. I watched you on the Deep End with Lecrae.
Yep.
Anytime someone talks about politics, I tune out. But when you talk, I listen.
Man, I appreciate that.
Yes. Yes.
I appreciate that.
I feel like you are a very good balance. I've never caught you being brash or being mean to anyone, so we appreciate that. But tell us about the new book. How's everything going with it?
It's going well. So last month, came out with my second book, which is Don't Let Nobody Turn You Around, How the Black Church's Public Witness Leads Us Out of the Culture War. And basically, it's I think the church in some ways, a lot of Christians have lost their way in politics. Where we're kind of following behind progressives or conservatives. Instead of stepping back and saying, what's the legacy that we were left with even from the civil rights generation? So I kind of look and say, how would the civil rights generation respond to this moment?
Okay.
Because that's like our legacy. That's, you know, a biblical application for the public square. And I think we need to revisit that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's really good. And talk about the work you're doing with AND Campaign.
Yeah, so I'm the co-founder and president of the AND Campaign. Some of y'all know Sho Baraka. He's another one of the co-founders. Mm-hmm. And really what we're trying to do is it's a Christian civic organization where we're trying to raise civic literacy, so help people understand the civic space better. But maybe even more importantly, to be biblical in that space.
Yeah.
Wow. Too often, the church is just reflecting the left and the right.
Yeah.
And we're saying, actually, we have a very unique point of view as Christians based on what the Bible tells us, which is far beyond what the Republicans or Democrats could, you know, could have us do. And so we need to, we help people think through issues. And just like you were saying earlier, we try to do, the Bible tells us to be impartial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not supposed to be biased. I'm not supposed to see an issue and then advocate for the Democrats or the Republicans. I'm supposed to tell the issue like it is.
Exactly.
Amen. And that's what we're trying to do, and we do some of that on the Church Politics Podcast as well.
I think that's one of the things that we see getting misconstrued the most, right, is that people will pick a side, but they won't necessarily look at what God is thinking about from that point of view.
Exactly. I think, I don't know that a lot of people know how to understand politics but for this conservative versus progressive binary. And so they're thinking when they look at politics, they're like, okay, either I have to go side with the left or I have to side for with the right, not knowing these are complicated issues and there's more than two answers. And in many cases, those two answers are both wrong, which leaves us in a pretty bad predicament.
So how do we navigate that?
I think you got to start with the word of God, what it calls calls from us. So you start in the gospel, you know, as Christians, we're supposed to have compassion.
Right.
So we are compassionate towards people who disagree with us and all that. But at the same time, we have boundaries, right? We have the doctrine. So that's our conviction. So the AND Campaign talks about it as compassion and conviction. If you look at our public square right now, you kind of notice there are some justice Christians who all they want to talk about is justice. Well, justice is good. I talk about it a lot, too. And then you have morality Christians who all they want to talk about is the morality.
Right.
But the Bible brings both of those together. I don't think there should be two different groups just talking about one or the other. I think there should be one group talking about both and how those balance each other out. We think that justice and moral order are in this tension. And we have to, even love and truth are in this tension in the Bible. It brings them together. It doesn't say just love or just be about the truth. It says to do both in Ephesians 14 through 15. So we have to live within that tension. We have to talk about the truth, but also show love. Because if we lean too far into the love, then we won't tell people the truth because we're trying to protect them. But you can't protect people from that. Or we lean too much into the truth and we don't, we say things, but we say it for the wrong reason and we're hurting people rather than, you know, speaking the truth in love.
I have a question. Do you feel like we should be more moderate then? Like, should it be more moderation as believers, you know what I mean?
That's a good question. Not necessarily. So Christians who think the way that I'm talking about often do find themselves somewhere in the middle because the extremes are so far. But what I don't want people to do is just search for the middle, because there's nothing inherently virtuous about the middle either. Some people are in the middle because they just want to avoid making a decision. They just want to be on the fence. So you might, because, I mean, you got one side that doesn't want to talk about, you know, the racist history of America. You got another side that doesn't see the differences between men and women. Of course, when it's that extreme, I'm probably going to be somewhere in the middle, but not because I'm searching for the middle.
Gotcha.
Right.
So gotcha. We want to search for what's true and just.
Yeah.
In a extreme society, a polarized society, usually you'll find yourself somewhere in the middle.
So you're saying just by pretty much avoiding the biases, you're going to find yourself in the middle just naturally.
Yeah, I think by having like the humility to say, you know, one side, this side, or that side could be wrong on something, you're not going to be so extreme because you're not taking positions that you're not listening to other people on, right? So that by listening to other people, a lot of times it makes you say, well, maybe I do need to moderate on this view a little bit. So again, it's not searching for that, but it's being about justice and truth. And oftentimes you'll find yourself somewhere in that space.
Yeah, shout out to Show Baraka. He and I do, we have something in common where we both have children with autism.
Okay.
And this past election, I was torn because there was a policy on the left that was going to really benefit my children, right? But then there was policies on the right that I also agree with just being a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we start to hear, you know, we start to hear other people's opinions about what we should do and how we should vote. And I think that causes a lot of people to misunderstand or be misinformed about you know which way they should vote. What are your thoughts about that when you vote according to you know a need?
Yeah, everybody has their priorities, and I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody saying, "Hey, my family's going through this, or my neighbors are going through this, so this is my priority in this particular election." Yeah. And so I kind of tell people, "Well, why don't you just list like 5 to 10 of your priorities,
okay,
and see which side hits those better, and you can make your decision from there." But I tell them, that doesn't mean that you just go along with that party on everything. I talk about this in my book. Let's say that you go with Democrats because you think they're right on 7 out of 10 things.
Okay.
That's a reasonable decision. I'm not mad at you that you make that decision. However, as a Christian, on those 3 things they get wrong, you can't be quiet about it. So I think what we usually do is say, oh, they get most of the stuff right, so I'm just going to go with them, and I'm going to ignore those 3 things that they get wrong. No,
that's
sir.
Really good.
That's good.
You got to speak up on those things that they get wrong. And that's how I think you can be in one party or the other and be faithful, because you're not just outsourcing your public witness to one side or the other. Yeah.
And I think that's the problem that we see is that there's a rub between the division, right? Christians on one side saying you should vote this way. Christians on the other side saying you should vote this way.
Yeah.
And then you hear, what does God want us to do, right? And then everybody in their mind thinks, well, this might be what God is telling me to do. Mm-hmm. And then this other person might think, this is what God is telling me to do. So we never necessarily get it right. We just have to go with it. And I think that's the scary part.
Yeah, just be prayerful and thoughtful.
Yeah.
You know, get it, have as much information as you can have.
Yeah.
Then just make a decision. And understand, this is what I tell people too. Politics isn't all just about the vote. Voting is one part of it. So people vote and they're like, everything rides on this. It's important. Take it seriously. But everything doesn't ride on that. Voting is just one part of the process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other things, whether you're sharing information, helping people get informed, in between election cycles, that matters just as much or not more than what happens in the election. Also understand, the national election ain't everything either, because you have state elections, you have local elections. Election. Somebody like me, I might vote for Democrats on the national election. I might vote for Republicans on the state. It just depends on what the issues are. Mm-hmm. I think we should have that type of flexibility and dexterity to say, what are the issues? Neither of these sides own me, right? So, you know, when you have somebody like, y'all probably remember Biden said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black.
Yeah.
I'm not going for that. I'm going to vote for whoever, you know, is has the best policies.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a better way to think about it. And so you don't put everything into that one national vote and think, man, if I make the wrong decision, life is not. Do the best that you can and then pay attention to the issues. But for me, it's less about taking a side and more about taking the right position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my problem during the election. It's like people who felt like they voted a certain way, they felt like, far as moral compass, they were doing a lot better than somebody else on the other side. Like, both sides have corrupt things going on. Like, both sides at the end of the day are more concerned about their personal well-being probably than you. So when I look at it, I'm like, don't feel like you're a better Christian because you voted for the left or for the right. Like you were saying, like, what are the issues? It's like, try your best to your convictions to vote according to that.
That's right.
As opposed to just saying, okay, this side over here, I'm just going to go with them. Because you might not agree with everything.
That's it, bro. That's it right there.
Do you feel like these upcoming midterm elections are very, very important? Like, do you feel like, you know what I mean? Because I think sometimes we don't even know who's on the ballot for midterm elections. So, like, one, how do you research that? And then two, like, how important are midterm elections? Like,
yeah,
you know, and that's coming prior to 2028, I believe, for presidency.
Yeah, so let me break that down. That's a very good point. So, obviously, the presidential elections happen every 4 years. Mm-hmm. But the House of Representatives happens every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, in between, in the middle of every president's term, there's another election for the House of Representatives and some people in the Senate, too. And so those elections are very important because if you understand the parts of government, that's the legislative part of the government. Those are the ones who actually create the laws. The president is just supposed to execute the laws. Mm-hmm. So the way that our government is set up, and it's, we can argue as whether they're doing it as they should right now, but that was the most important part, was the legislative part of it. Mm. The president wasn't supposed to be the most important part. It's really the legislative, right, when it came to creating laws, was the most important part. Got some you. People would say they're not. They've kind of pushed their responsibility over to the president because they don't want to make hard decisions. Mm-hmm. That's a longer conversation. But, oh, yeah, it's absolutely important, and you should be paying attention to the issues and what people are saying. And a lot of times what you'll find is whoever's in the presidency, their side loses. Their party loses a lot of seats in that midterm. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. That'll probably be the case, my guess,
this time. Like how it just happened this year a little bit where it was like, I'm sure Trump didn't believe that he was going to lose a lot of new Democrats and different like that. So you you believe that it's maybe like that in the next cycle? As well?
I think at least for the House of Representatives that Democrats probably have the edge at this moment.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
gotcha.
We'll see. But that's not rare. That's usually what happens. Happened to Obama. Happens a lot of times.
Gotcha.
In this election, we had the 2025 project that was scaring everybody. Was there a responsibility there for people to, I mean, like, it was what, 1,000 pages mm-hmm. document?
Yeah.
Was there a responsibility for us to dig into that before the vote, or did we already kind of know what was coming out of that?
I think we should all try to take a look. Now I'm realistic. Everybody who's not in politics is not a policy nerd like me. You're not going to read the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you should try to find sources that you trust to tell you who have gone through it, to tell you what's in there and what is problematic. Because there was a lot of things that were problematic in there that I had real trouble with. And then there were some things that people on the left were saying that just wasn't true.
Yeah.
Right? So people were, it was bad, but then you also had people on the other side exaggerating how bad some of the things were, which is just what they do.
Yeah.
And so that's why you need trusted voices to kind of tell you, hey, here's what's really going on.
Yeah, there was somebody I listened to that went through it, and I can't remember who that person was, but I felt good about what they were telling us. You know, they were breaking it down, so yeah, that was interesting.
Do you have any recommended voices that you trust?
Like I said, we have the Church Politics Podcast. I always go, one of the things, and I don't even necessarily agree with these folks. I mean, some of these folks are even atheists or whatever, but what I look at is, are they intellectually honest? Mm-hmm. Are they going to tell you the whole story? So, like, Breaking Points is pretty good. You can get that on YouTube. Unheard. And there's a few Rising from the Hill. There's a few that you can go to that they're going to give you at least the best arguments on both sides. Because what you have to worry about, and where I think a lot of Christians find themselves, is they don't realize that if I'm just watching Fox News or if I'm just watching MSNBC, which I guess is MS Now, then I'm not getting the whole story.
Yeah, right.
They're giving me the worst arguments on the other side, which means I don't even know what the best voices are saying. I don't know the full debate because I'm only getting one side of it. And so when we get caught up in what we call our echo chambers, because everybody, and even me, everybody is called confirmation bias. We want to hear what we already believe.
Right.
If I get stuck in just trying to hear what I already believe, I don't even know what good arguments on this. So I could be dead wrong and just not know it. Because they're going to show me the characters.
Right.
The people that make their argument look better, they're not going to show me the thinking people. And so I tell people, if you don't know people on both sides, not that you agree with them, but who are intellectually honest and who are intelligent, that's on you. That's not on the other side.
Yeah.
There are people on both sides. You may disagree with them. They may be wrong, but there are people on both sides who are trying to be intellectually honest and are intelligent. You have to find them so you can make a better decision based on the best arguments on both sides.
Did you hear recently about the whole Dr. King Juneteenth thing? And then like how they said Trump is trying to wipe that out and put his name up. Is that 100% true or what? Do you know anything about that?
There's been a lot. So there was something about like the national parks. Uh-huh. You couldn't get in for free with that. Do I think that he's just trying to wipe out MLK Day? I don't think it's gone. I haven't heard that it's gone that far, but I did hear about the national parks, which was probably somebody below him that made that decision, but it shouldn't have happened. Like, you shouldn't allow people. They should know you don't do nothing like that. So yeah, I did hear that. I did hear about the national parks. Yeah.
And my last question is, how much do you encourage for people to vote the policies and not the person? Right, because a lot of times we can see things happen, people's character flaws and things of that nature, and it represents that party. But you also are like, man, well, that also party represents some of the things that I truly believe in, and I think God wants me to steward.
I always believe that both matter. I think both matter.
Yeah.
If you're just a terrible, malicious person and you have policies I like, I can't ignore that, because the president is the leader, in many ways, the most powerful leader in the world. Mm-hmm. What they say, how they act, how they treat other people, if they're trustworthy, matters. Yeah. And so what does it mean that you tell me you're going to do these policies that I like if you don't have any integrity, and or if you're going to put down my neighbor and treat them a certain way? I can't ignore that. And I know there's Christians who have found a way, because, you know, I think it's politically expedient to dismiss that or overlook that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's wrong.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
At the same time,
understanding that these are politicians,
yeah,
and they ain't Jesus, right? So all of them got some issues, but we shouldn't ignore them. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. No, that's real. I just wanted to ask if you have any insight or wisdom on how to engage with LGBTQ policies.
Yeah.
I found, like, I don't feel like there's a lot of Christian voices speaking to their plight.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of just feels like, okay, how do we operate in compassion toward this community while still recognizing, to your point, that conviction? And I've kind of just felt like, I don't know how to engage with that, because these are still image bearers, and they may not, some of them may be saved, some of them may not, but like, how do we as Christians engage with how to be on the side of advocating for policies that are considering that?
That's a great question, because so many Christians are struggling with that, because I like to talk about it, it's not them, it's us. It's people in our family, it's people who are next door to us. I don't think there should be this huge separation, like this is some other world that people live in. The first thing I say is, I want to come with the compassion. I want to say, we have to come into this conversation with a broken heart. Because there are people who were just trying to figure out their lives, trying to figure out why they felt a certain way. And there were a lot of churches, not every church, that made them feel like they didn't belong or couldn't be there at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wrong. Or made it seem like that sin was the only one that really was bad and really mattered. And people leave feeling like, man. And then they go into these other communities that are welcoming them with open arms. Like, you're one of us. We're here with you. And we wonder why they would rather be there than be in the church. So I think we need to take responsibility for that legacy and how people have been hurt in the church and take that seriously. Right. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, where the compassion and conviction puts us into attention. So that's the compassion of Jesus Christ, who went to people who had sexual sin and showed them love and all those things. But we can't ignore the sin in it, too. Right. And so we do have to maintain our convictions, which I think, especially in a city like Atlanta, you know, progressive spaces can be very hard to say, but that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll go back to Ephesians 4 verses 14 through 15 that says, speak the truth in love.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, we know whether it's in a heterosexual relationship, homosexual relationship, a marriage is between a man and woman, and that's where intercourse is supposed to happen.
Right.
That's the rule for everybody. It ain't worse for no one group or worse for another. We have to maintain that, because that's moral order. That's God's design. That's the way that he put things together.
Absolutely.
When we think we're smart and we depend on our own wisdom to pull that apart, we can just, I mean, go to some of our schools where half the kids are dressing the opposite. And there's just so much confusion because we've opened the door to say, well, just do what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
What we feel, I mean, how many of us have felt something and then, you know, 3 weeks later, a year later, like, that was terrible, right? Like, Jeremiah said, our heart is deceitful.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have to have the thoughtfulness and the compassion to hold both those things, to the truth of what's going on and the love. I don't think we've always done that well. And we have to understand, too, that when we apply that conviction, certain communities, it's never going to be enough. So don't think just because I'm saying this and I'm trying to be loving and compassionate that everybody in the LGBTQ plus, you know, community is going to be like, oh, thank you, you're great. No,
right.
We're trying to glorify God. Mm-hmm. And you can dislike me, but just know that I would sacrifice for you because you're my neighbor, mm-hmm. just like I'd sacrifice for anybody else. If that's not enough, I don't know what to say, but I'm trying to glorify God and show you love. So we do have to stand up for people, invite people in, but also know that God calls for transformation. Not just from, you know, people who are same-sex attracted, but people in all communities. When we go into the church, he transforms us. Right. He doesn't leave us as we are.
Right.
Amen.
Wow, that's good. So as we transition to this this first conversation, I think it's going to be interesting. This is a conversation that Erica Kirk was having about Candace Owens being unhinged. So let's take a listen at that.
You know, I have to say it. I've never seen you like this.
No, I'm there. This is righteous anger because this is not okay. It's not healthy. This is a mind virus. And so my message to them is to stop. To stop.
Turning Point USA CEO Erica Kirk furiously rebuked conspiracy theorists, peddling deranged claims about the death of her late husband, Charlie Kirk. During an interview with Fox News' Harris Faulkner on December 10th, Erica decried the toll the theories have had on her team. In the weeks that followed the brutal caught-on-camera gunning down of her husband that shocked the world, prominent right-wing figures, such as Candace Owens, have spewed unfounded claims about his death and even raised questions about his funeral arrangements. Owens, who worked as a communications director for Turning Point USA between 2017 and 2019, has openly cast doubt on the notion that suspect Tyler Robinson acted alone. She's floated theories that Charlie Kirk's own organization, quote, betrayed him and that the U.S. government was involved. For weeks, Owens has also seemingly implied, though not outright alleged, that Israeli intelligence may have also had a hand in Charlie's murder.
About 48 hours before Charlie Kirk died, Charlie informed people at Turning Point, as well as Jewish donors and a rabbi, that he had no choice but to abandon the pro-Israel cause outright. Did he also express that he wanted to bring me, Candace Owens, back because he was standing up for himself? And then did he, just 48 hours later, conveniently catch a bullet to the throat before our onstage reunion?
Erica described her Turning Point USA team as family and underscored that many of them were present when a bullet ripped through her husband while he was engaging with students at Utah Valley University.
My team, they are rocked to the core. So why every single day did they have to be dragged through the mud, analyzed, hyper-analyzed?
Owens has also contributed to the stirring of theories about the location of Charlie's burial, claiming that he was laid to rest in a Catholic cemetery, despite him not being Catholic.
But can I have one thing? Can my babies have one thing where we hold it sacred, where my husband is laid to rest, where I don't have to be worried about some secular revolutionary coming and destroying my husband's grave while my daughter is sitting there praying?
Hours after Erica's Fox News appearance, Owens went on the attack again on her podcast, ripping Erica for not addressing the rumors publicly as the new CEO of the company, but as a mourning widow.
Whoa, Erica Kirk shuts down. No, she didn't even respond to one of the conspiracies. She gave us emotion. She gave us emotion. She said, I'm a mother, I am a wife, and we never asked about whether she was mother or wife. We want to know if she is a CEO and a chairman.
The back and forth between the pair comes as Erica's team gears up to address Owen's head-scratching claims. Blake Neff, producer of The Charlie Kirk Show, announced that his team will give their public rebuttal to Owen's claims on Monday, December 15th. He extended a public invitation to Owens, who has indicated she won't be able to make it in person or via a video link.
Okay, so what do y'all think about that? First of all, man, I just think it's too much. I really do. Yeah, no, I really think it's too much. But, you know, we'll see. Because my main thing is for them to have been so close at one time that Candace could possibly let this go or change the tone that she's bringing it to. Like, she could literally say, I'm just really concerned. I'm really worried about what could be happening behind the scenes or what could be happening within his internal camp. But instead, she's coming out, she's being, you know, dramatic, and she's being, she's trying to illustrate this point that I feel like, you know, you really need to respect the wishes of Charlie Kirk's wife. I mean, this is her life that she's having to put back together. And Candace is a talking head for social media. So that's my thought. I just feel like I wish I could see her do this in a more respectful way. I think that's just awful.
Oh, no. I think with, like I said before, I think with Candace Owens, this is somebody who's triggered by the way her good friend lost his life. And I think when we have traumatic experiences, sometimes our emotions can get the best of us. And some people just check out. Like some people, trauma sometimes can have you trapped in a moment in time, mm-hmm. and it's hard for you to get by it. Mm-hmm. And so you're not really thinking about the emotions and the feelings of those around you. You're trapped in this moment where your best friend was killed in front of the mm-hmm. whole world. And I think because she's trapped in that moment, she's not taking into consideration how the wife or the children or everybody may feel. She just wants answers, she feels like. And I think she might not be going about it the best way all the time. As we said off the camera, some of the stuff she's saying is legit. Some of the stuff is more speculation. But I think when you're led by your emotions, you have the tendency to kind of be scattered and be all over the place to the point where even if you say something legitimate, it's going to sound like gibberish because you done discredited yourself by saying so many other things. When it comes to his wife, I don't know how much we can really expect from her. I think she's probably, I want to say, I hope, I don't know what's going on with these folks behind the scene, to be honest. But I'm just saying, naturally speaking, his wife is probably still in shock. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. it's not a day go by you don't have to explain to your children or talk to your children and yeah. kind of help them wrap their mind around the fact
and
that
the holidays coming up.
Yeah, that daddy's not going to come through the door. So yeah. it's a lot on her, and she's on the public stage having to answer these questions and trying to be strong and do all this stuff. It's tough. It's easy to point out somebody's flaws and nitpick them when they're in such a vulnerable space. Like I said, I'm not the biggest fan, but I'm not inconsiderate either. You know what I'm
saying? But look at it like this. Like, if she used to work with him for Turning Point, right? Mm-hmm. And you do suspect that this is going on, gather this information up, you know? Take it to the right people. But you put it out on social media, you give it time to be flushed out. You give it time to for them to bury it.
But who are the right people, though?
That's what she needs to figure
that's
out.
What I'm saying.
Her doing this is wildly, I think, inappropriate because it's all speculation.
In her defense, I will say this. Who are you going to go to with some, if you have some incriminating evidence against the government, mm-hmm. Who are you going to go to with that? You know what I'm saying? So I get why she's taking the platform that she's taking. I mean,
but even if she wanted to
it's not
to
even
get,
safe for her to really go to certain places right. with that
it's
kind
not,
of story.
But even mm-hmm. if she was best friends with Carly Churk, which I don't think it was they were best friends. I think they could have had, you know, a relationship, a friendship or something like that. But I don't say best friends. But
we don't know.
If she did have that information or she felt that way, I think the most respectful thing for her to do would be go to his wife and say, these are my concerns. What are your thoughts
this
about
is, this
it?
Should like, be blunt. Let's be real about it. She yeah. don't trust his wife either.
Yeah.
She, but man. the way Candace Owens is approaching, it, she feel like her wife has something. She feel like his wife has been compromised.
I remember they said it was like a $300,000 deposit just a couple of weeks before he passed away from an anonymous.
I mean, and they playing with real money. I don't think $300,000 enough for her to be compromised. But I just think we don't know what's going on. But for whatever reason, $300,000, I don't think that's enough to sit there and let your husband get killed like that. But I think Candace Owens feels like the whole organization let him down, and that Erica Kirk was compromised. And some of her behavior mm-hmm. is kind of suspect that we've seen behind the scenes. But who to say? I don't want to just, you know, put my opinions on it. But that's how Candace feels. She feels like the wife is not a legitimate source to go to either.
Well, I think the question, though, too, is, like, what's the root? Like, I'm always like, what's the root of this? Like, what's the root of her feeling the way she feels besides her friend getting killed? Because in my mind, I'm like, if my friends get killed and their wives are like, hey, you're doing a lot. You know what I mean? Can you cool out and stuff like that? I should have more respect for my friend.
Absolutely.
And even if I don't care for his wife, I should have more respect for my friend and listen to his wife to be like, you know what? Let me back down and do X, Y,
well,
what Z.
What if you think the wife has something to do with it?
But I mean, at the same time, I still should have respect for his wife.
I feel what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? But to me, and I'll say that, I get what you're saying. Even though she may feel like Turning Point was behind it, whatever. But even I think what it is also is she is anti-Jew right now. So, and when I mean anti-Jew, meaning like she's like, ever since she lost her job at the Daily Wire, whatever, she's been like almost on some Kanye type vibe where it's like, you know, forget the Jews, forget da, 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 da. And I'm just saying that's what
it's
she's been saying.
That's the way it looks.
So that's what it looks like. So if I'm deep down, she just said it in the clip that if I'm hearing Charlie Kirk saying how I'm about to move away from Israel and stuff like that, just like I am, then I'm like, oh yeah, look, you know what I'm saying? Like they did me wrong, they did him wrong too. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think at the core, she's a journalist. Like I have a bachelor's in journalism, so there's enough evidence there for her to search out her cause. Now, unfortunately, it sucks that it's in such close quarters, as in this was her friend. So that's what makes this a little more touchy, I would say. But she's a journalist, and this is not the first time someone was assassinated, and a journalist is trying has a theory, and they're trying to work it out. So I get it. You're supposed to have, but like he said, if you feel like the wife is compromised, this is not about you. I think that this man was murdered and assassinated, and there's enough evidence to support my theory, so I'm going to search it out. Her being public is keeping her alive or whatever. So I get all of that. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I do understand that Erica Kirk is in a sensitive situation. But like Candace is saying, you the one made yourself CEO. So if you can't handle answering the questions as a CEO and you want to mourn as a widow, that's fine. And as a mother and a wife, that's fine. But you put yourself in the position of CEO and I do the job.
Yeah.
So I do see both sides of that at the same time. But it's like, Candace, do your thing. Ask the questions. That's what journalism is for. Checks and balances. Ask the questions.
But if I give you the answer and you say, well, you lying, I'm like, but I'm giving you the answer.
Yeah, look who she up against, though. Bro.
Right.
Like, you talking about Jews. We talking about the government. We talking about different people. Like, I mean, they control the media. They could paint a narrative to make you look crazy, and everybody's going to believe it.
Yeah.
She may be telling, for all we know, we're not there. She could be telling us 100% facts. We don't know.
Yeah.
And they may know she's telling the truth, but what are they going to do? They're going to paint a narrative that she's crazy. So exactly. We really don't know.
But my question to you guys is, what if she's not telling the truth?
We don't know.
How many times have people that have been saying something that doesn't align with the media have been called conspiracy theorists and have been proven right over time?
No, you can't be proven right. But
so and the same thing have been said to them. You need to sit down. You need to chill. You need to do the most. But at the end of the day, they end up being right.
Can you give me an example? I'm just
sure. Because
you talk about COVID.
Right. Let's talk about COVID. And let's talk about how many people are dying with COVID and how people die. And they don't even know that that is the solution.
Or just the idea of where it came from. Right. So initially, people were getting kicked off social media for saying it came from a lab. And they were people were getting canceled. Mm-hmm. And then now, if you read the transcripts from the Senate committees, it's most likely that it came from a lab. I mean, that stuff does happen.
That's one.
I would say if I can chime in, first of all, I love these conversations because I like how y'all have the conversation because this is how real people talk. Like nobody's trying to be overly politically correct, right? Like these are real, and I'm guessing that's why people connect with y'all because that's how real people talk. And so sometimes when you're talking to political people, everybody is like an agenda and everybody's trying to be, politically correct. So I appreciate this. Yeah. So here's how I'm thinking about Candace right now. One of the issues is Candace's style is always abrasive.
Yes.
And somewhat provocative.
Yeah.
And this is a very serious issue, especially for Erica Kirk and anybody that may be involved. And it's somewhat being mixed with entertainment, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think at that moment, when I do check out what she's saying, there's some questions that have to be answered. It's just like when it's so provocative, when it's so abrasive and you slide in the entertainment angle in there.
Yeah.
Right. It just comes off as wrong. So I can't speak on what's going on. Like you said, we just don't really know what's going on.
Right.
I do hesitate myself to embrace what would be called conspiracy theories, but I also push back against people who act like there's no such thing as a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Like just because you don't have all the proof, it never happened. Nah. If you look back in history, there's a lot of stuff that was going on. You think people who are trying to control billions of dollars are not going to conspire?
Oh,
they do, but we still have to, and that's the balance. We still have to say, I have a responsibility not to just promote every speculative conspiracy theory that's out there. And so I think we got to try to find that balance. Yeah.
And that's what bothers me about social media is, right, you never necessarily know if it's for the clicks, if it's for the views.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you spew this about Charlie Kirk, it's going to get millions of views, which is going to produce a pretty big check. So it's just like, would you be willing, and I say this about all social media platforms, would you be willing to turn off the monetization for that one video just because you really want this point to get across and you want to show that it's not about the clickbait? This is not about
She's putting up numbers now.
Oh, yeah.
She getting paid.
Oh, yeah.
Putting up numbers.
I think it's both for her. I think, obviously, she's trying to get paid. It's her income, you know what I'm saying? So she want to make money. But I do think it's a burning passion to try to share what she believes to be the truth and get some insight as well. Because she kind of just blacks out, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's always been, like, abrasive and, like, borderline rude when she communicated. I like it. I like the sharp. That really don't bother me.
Hmm.
But,
talk your talk.
But yeah, say what you got to say. Yep. At least I ain't got no surprises. You know what I'm saying? But I think now this is the most emotional I've seen her along with that. Normally she's pretty composed and she's going to tell you, like, yeah, I don't like this. I don't like that. Boom, boom, boom. But this is the most emotional I've seen her. This is the most I've seen her kind of come unraveled or kind of like semi-seem scatterbrained sometimes when she's saying, because she's just all over the place with the entertainment aspect of it, with what she believes to be true. Also trying to deal with the emotion of what just happened, mm-hmm. and like, this man just got shot in the neck in front of the whole world. You know what I'm saying? Like, people who don't even know the man, it affected them. They're still being affected by it. So naturally, she worked with him for, even if it was just 2 years and they were friends behind the scenes, it's going to affect her. So it's a lot of different variables that coming into play. But I think for her, it's bigger than clicks. I think.
I really hope so.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Because obviously, we want to get paid. I think we come on here. It's like, if nobody was watching it, you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, we were trying to figure out how to get folks to watch it, you know what I'm saying?
That was 18 years of our lives, so we really had about the clicks.
But nobody sat back and said, you know what, they ain't watched for 18, I guess they ain't going to watch for 19 either. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you try to find ways and push them, because if you feel like God really gave you something or you really have a message that's worth sharing, you're going to find ways to get it out. So I don't think it's a sin in that. So, yeah, you want to be seen. Mm-hmm. You want what your message is to be heard. But I also think it's a real rooted passion.
I know. Go ahead. I'm
sorry. I think for me is, and I follow Candace Owens because I like you said earlier, what off is like when we tell people like, hey, don't listen to that person. It's like, let me hear what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, but I just think to me is sometimes when people do you wrong, you know what I'm saying? Like, is the motive pure? Like, is it just something on top of something that, like, if it's pure motives of, hey, I really want to see who killed my friend versus.
See, look how they did me.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to heal before you can be constructive.
Exactly.
And you got a lot of people bleeding on other people instead of like healing.
Yeah, very true.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So, but I'm not saying what you guys are saying is wrong, because she could be 100% right. Because in my mind, I'm like, you would, like, and I'm thinking about his wife, like, you would kill your husband for, like, that doesn't make sense to me. But I mean, at the same time, people do dumb things all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
What I'm about to say, but hey, and she wouldn't be the first.
I would.
I didn't say she did. I'm just saying she wouldn't be the first.
Allegedly. I would like to
allegedly.
I would like to see her just be apologetic in her tone. You know what I mean? Like, if you saw the video that Erica Kirk did, the interview, and she told you how she felt. She said, this is what this is doing to me. I have to look these kids in the eye and, you know, basically let them heal, right? Every time you come on the mic, apologize before what you're about to say and just be like, hey, this is not to be meant in this. I don't want you to take it in this way, but I do want to put this out there and say this. Like, just be compassionate.
Right. If I said, I apologize for stabbing you, and I hit you with a knife, that ain't going to make the stab feel any better.
No, like, the apology can come after the stab.
But even still, you still stab.
We ain't
going
to clip it. You ain't even going
to
see it.
But what I'm saying is, you're never going to be able to repair your reputation.
She don't care.
Talking about.
You're talking to a woman.
Here's the thing, though, right? If Charlie Kirk was still living and he had a chance to say, hey, Candace, I want you to respect my wife, don't you think he would say that?
If Charlie was still living, she wouldn't be doing what she's doing right now.
What I'm saying is, even though that person is no longer here to speak up for that person, speak up for their spouse, I would still want you to respect my wife. If anything ever happened to me and my wife came on the show and said anything to any one of y'all, I would still hope that y'all would respect whatever thought she has.
We don't know what conversation Charlie might be feeling like, man, they did take me out. We don't know.
Yeah, I understand that part.
Especially when she said she had a dream.
That's the speculation.
That's bull. You know what I'm saying? He had no dream. Hey, that wasn't Charlie.
No, that's what she said. She said recently, I had a dream and Charlie Kirk came to me.
We talked about it.
Yeah, we know how we feel about
that wasn't Charlie.
What they call it, necromancy. But call it what it is. Mm-hmm. Amen. But I think this is something interesting because this is 2025 and we have social media. Because if we go back, because you said, what's an example? One that came to me is MLK. So when MLK was assassinated, you know how many conspiracy, quote unquote, conspiracy theorists said that he was assassinated by the government? And that turned out to be right? Mm-hmm. So you can respect Coretta, and even like we didn't have this on our phone to literally go live all the time, but they were talking. I'm sure Coretta heard all the conspiracies throughout all the years, but they still kept driving it, and at the end of the day, they were right.
But I mean, we can even go recent. Right? We can even go recent. Jaguar Wright. I mean, she's been talking about Diddy forever. Mm-hmm.
But what? Yeah, I think the difference between what you said about MLK is that I think anybody who even as a child, I knew this was a government setup. You know what I mean? Like, just look at all the different pieces that were put together. Charlie's situation is a little bit harder to dissect, just because he was a figure that had a lot of enemies in that situation, and he was live when it happened.
Dr. King didn't have a lot of
enemies. Well, he did, but I'm saying we don't have social media right
civil
now.
Right, but civil rights,
right? They still existed. It just wasn't on Instagram.
But
here's the thing. I think the difference is this. We don't know. She is claiming that he was about to leave Israel, and we don't know that. We don't know that for sure. You get what I'm saying? We don't know that. That's just a speculation. That's what she said. I got information that we don't know that. We know about Dr. King and why he got assassinated because what he was doing.
Yeah.
We don't know that's the reason why that happened to Charlie Kirk, because he was about to pull away from being pro-Israel.
I mean, a month before his assassination on his show, he changed his statement and his stance on Israel.
Got you.
So he did do things. And I'm not, I know, even though y'all like to place me as a Charlie Kirk advocate, I don't follow and know all the things. But the things that have come across my feed does make it seem like, okay, Candace may be going somewhere here, because that was public. And then supposedly he was offered, I think, like 130 mil or something by Israel that he turned down, and that he was invited to Israel as well with a couple other politicians that they went, but he didn't go. So there are some things that's leading up to why you didn't go and tour Israel with everybody else, why they were like courting you, because you were trying to get away from it.
So y'all think Charlie Kirk is so powerful that him not backing Israel would have changed the course of Israel?
I don't know. All I know is, shoot, when the man got killed, when the last time you seen this much
unrest,
like unrest and so much chaos? Like, people compared it to the death of Martin Luther King, which I feel like is rather strong.
Well, it can be compared to the death as far as a political assassination that we all, you know.
I'm just looking at the plight of African Americans and who Martin Luther King was to the plight of African Americans who are already marginalized.
Right. Nah, yeah, no.
Like, right. It ain't neck to neck and apples. It's apples to oranges. Yeah. But it did affect, you know, and impact in a great way.
Yeah, it was very impactful. So, I mean, obviously he had more effect than we thought he did. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right, so this next conversation, I'm going to take a little bit back to y'all's conversation last week a little bit. Dame Dash says we really shouldn't be tearing down Diddy. And after we talk about this, I do want to talk about, just as because these topics kind of like fit together, I do want to talk about the Michigan coach, because the stuff I'm hearing about that is like, you can't just ignore that. Sad. All right, let's get into this conversation. We got
the Diddy clone was reckoning. Did you check it out?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, so we know that you were saying that it was not going to come out. So how do you feel that it actually is?
I honestly thought, you know, based on like moral codes and like coming from where like a street ethic, I honestly didn't think that he would ever do that.
Why though?
Because I wouldn't.
You know the question, why he has done.
Because it's just not my job to tell. I'm not a black man that's going to tear another black man down. Let them do that. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, like if somebody, you know, again, allegedly, it just seems like somebody, Puff, you know, violated his baby mother in front of his kid. So, but that's not how we deal with things from where we're from. You know,
Did you check him on the back end?
I know y'all girls, but I'm not answering that. But I gotta let me answer the question. So again, you may not understand like a moral conduct for a grown man from where I'm from and where I thought he was from. Mm-hmm. There's just certain things, and like, it's not for us to tear somebody down. So for example, if I'm a criminal and I see somebody doing a crime, I'm not telling. If it might be a violation, like they might be doing some shit that might be like a violation to a kid, then I got to go handle that if I sign on to the street. So for me, I'm not going to do that because that platform is not black owned. I'm never going to tear a black man down for a white man ever in my life. Also, I know Puff, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that, again, I'm not ever going to check for his moral character. As you see, we never did too much business together. Mm-hmm. But it would never be me to be the person to deliver that. Let them do it. Mm-hmm. So probably another person, I would say, go ahead, do that. Maybe someone from, so like example, TMZ called me and was like, yo, we want you to do the interview and this, that, and the third. And I'm like, yo, you think I would ever, ever make money for y'all tearing another black man down, even if that man is wrong? If I'm a black man and I want to do something, I'm going to go tear down a white man. I'm not going to tear down a black man. There's so many injustices that we see other people from other cultures do, but we don't say nothing, and they always send us to tear us down. Are you serious? I would never, ever condone a black man tearing down another black man for a white man. That will never happen. And if a dude, listen, and also another thing, just on my moral code, if a man did that to my girl, and I felt like I'm violated, I gotta wear that. Or I gotta handle that different. See? But I'm not making a documentary. I'm gonna go deal with it. But that's just.
Lock him up. Man. Call the police. Lock him up. He's an accomplice. Yeah.
Tear him.
Lock him up.
Tear him all the way down, man. Like, did he ruin lives? He ruined lives. There are victims. You gotta tear these people down. Like, I mean, no different.
Yeah. And it ain't even tearing them down. I don't like that narrative. You're holding people accountable.
Pull him down off his high horse. Let's just call it that. Like, pull him down from the ranks, because that was insane. Oh, thank you.
The caption box.
Yeah. Thank you. That was insane.
So it's two different worlds. And coming from that environment and being out of it now, I can hear the ignorance in it. You know what I'm saying? You can hear the ignorance in it. Like,
there you go.
You know what I'm saying?
I love having these conversations with James. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah. I can hear the ignorance in it. It's like, you see somebody doing something wrong, you're not going to say that. So it's a difference. Like, so when you're in the hood, it's like, what is snitching and what's not snitching?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody goes and they hurt some kids or something like that, and you say something, technically they say that's not snitching. Snitching is if we're involved in the crime together.
Then
I tell on you and I was doing the same thing you were doing. Mm-hmm. They would consider that to be snitching. All right, so I'm looking at this documentary, right? We're looking at Diddy. And let's be real, 50 had a vendetta against Diddy. So
of course,
we know that. But even with that vendetta,
even past the troll,
a lot of the things that we see Diddy do was very distasteful. If I had a gripe against 50, it would have had to be, why, if you knew all this stuff was going on all this time and all these years, why do you wait till now to say something about it because he did something with your lady? Like, if you feel like if it was really about, like, a moral code and really revealing this man as a monster, why wait years and years and years? So that's what makes it seem petty, is because if you had this information the whole time before he messed with your ex-girlfriend, you should have came out and said something about it. So that's why I feel like it's kind of petty. But the fact of the matter is, Diddy did what he did. The darkness always going to come to the light. The lifestyle that he was living, he put himself in a position to be exposed in this way. Mm-hmm. So I feel like everybody who's involved is wrong in some capacity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just like if I knew somebody and messed with somebody and this person had to deal with that all these years, but I wait till that person did something to me and now I want to say, well, they did this. Like, if you knew this 5 years ago, why are you just not saying it? You know what I'm saying? Like, you really care about the women involved and the people involved and the careers involved. So I feel like it's messy all the way around. I feel like it's just a dirty situation that it just make us all, it's just a black eye on the culture. I feel like it's a black eye. Is. You know what I'm saying? I think, because what happens is people don't just look at these people. Like, when you have certain groups of people, they look at all of us and they say, hey, this is what they do. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is how they behave. This is how they turn on one another. This is how they treat people when they have a little bit of money. This is how they settle their disagreements. This is how, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just bad as a whole. So I think as a believer in Christ, I had to look at both sides and I had to say, okay, Diddy obviously in sin. 50 is not like Jesus Christ. He's not like you know what I'm saying, the holiest man. He trolling folks every day on social media, tearing folks down. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like Diddy was tearing people down in a certain way. 50 was tearing people down in a certain way. So I feel like he's really no winner in this. He's just a bad example of how to handle disputes.
Now, can I pose a question? Mm-hmm. So like you said, if you really care, why would you collect this stuff all the time? I don't have an opinion on the question. I'm just going to ask a question. Mm-hmm. So one could ask the same thing about the feds. So is it petty or is it wise? Because the feds obviously was building a case on Diddy all this time and didn't do anything. And a lot of people were upset about that because they was like, all of the victims did that could have avoided this torture and the things that they went through. Why did you wait? But usually they wait because they were waiting till they gather enough evidence. That way they can send them away for good. Because if you don't have enough, they get off. So was it petty or was it wise? I don't know.
I'll say this. To answer your question, is wise. Because at the end of the day, you don't, like you said, he didn't get with the time that they wanted him to get. But you still have to build your case with somebody. You just can't just jump out the window and be like, hey, this one person say that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
for a couple years. And then, honestly, we don't have the conversation about Cassie being bold enough to come forward. Because her to come forward and sue him for all those things and have the proof open a Pandora's box that now more people could be like, y'all, that happened in situations like that. So I would say that about that situation. My other thing would be like, the streets is dead. And Dame Dad still think like he's in the streets.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. I think the reason why some of our communities are the way they are is because we have people like Dame Dash thinking that way. And because people don't want to tell on people because you think you're a snitch or whatever, that mentality keeps the trauma going in our communities, and we don't want to have that conversation. Them ladies were trying to say, nah, bro, we got to keep people accountable. You're right. You got to keep people accountable. You know what I'm saying? But that mentality, that street hustler mentality of I handle it myself, is a double-edged sword, because if you handle it yourself, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
And the distorted loyalty, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to never do that to a black man. Well, look what the black man did to everybody else in this community.
Right.
It doesn't even make sense. So it's like, I would go to a white community and tear that down. Why? Like, wrong is wrong.
Yeah. Right.
Come on. And so I'm all for solidarity and love for your community, but the whole idea that no matter what somebody does, don't ever tear another black man. No, he tore himself down. And this is just, as you said, everything coming to light. So I think we got to get away from that, putting identity over truth, putting that identity over protecting people. And you see that, I mean, you see that in a lot of parts of the culture where we're so hung up on that identity, which means something. It's not insignificant, but we as Christians know it don't mean everything, and we don't put that above doing the right thing.
And he tear Jay-Z down every end of the year. Every end. Jay-Z, a black man.
Cameron.
Yeah.
That part.
That's because they did something to him.
Charlamagne.
He's petty about it.
That's why he's relevant now. Because he's talking about them. If he wasn't talking about them, nobody would be talking to Dame Dash right now.
That was going to be my comment. Like, I just don't know why he's on anybody's platform. The man, he seems incoherent. Like, no one needs to be interviewing him. You know what I mean? So I don't know why, just because he's held a certain, I guess, position or been in certain spaces, does that really give him the merit to be able to have a certain amount of wisdom to speak to these topics? Like, he's
a hip-hop mogul.
But he is not coherent.
Oh, but that doesn't matter. I mean,
but it clearly matters.
It seems like people laughing at him now.
It matters
instead
to us.
Of laughing with him. Yeah, it does.
It matters to us, but to him and his community, that doesn't matter.
Nobody's taking it
seriously. Just look at the way he was. I mean, I'd say he disrespected those young ladies. You know, he called them girls, and then they kept trying to talk, and he kept saying, and he just got louder and louder and louder.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know why any platform would bring him on. No, like, no disrespect.
Now, that's
like,
entertainment,
whatever.
Though. That's what people are thinking.
That's really what
it is. People are thinking.
Entertainment.
Okay.
I feel like he was so side with Diddy anyway, because weren't you dating Aaliyah when she was significantly younger than you?
Yeah, man.
Shots fired.
I'm just saying.
I think the thing with what I see with 50 is 50 doesn't care.
Groomer.
50 doesn't care. He has made his own lane. He's been successful at it. He is already respected in the hip hop community. He doesn't care. You know what I mean? It's like what was he, shot 9 times or something like that? Yeah. Like, when you've seen death almost like that close, you don't care about anything else.
But I also think he really loved that woman, honestly.
Yeah,
because when I seen photos of him and the boy with him, like, I could tell 50 was like, I could probably spend the rest of my life with this lady.
Yeah,
but when you find out your wife was that freak off, so your girlfriend was that freak, that changes your whole dynamic.
It does,
about
but
stuff.
Then also that gets put on that person.
So now you want to talk about a moral code. You talk about between men. It's like, you know, this is my lady, but then you bring her over and y'all doing freak offs and stuff like that, and you've been in my face. You know what I'm saying? You know you were doing this with my lady. So now 50 got a vendetta against you.
Oh, yeah, 50 got a vendetta, and he's also embarrassed.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing.
That's what causing the vendetta, the embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now he's going, but I'm saying before your girl was in the freak offs, you can't tell me, because all this footage they got, this ain't new footage.
But this is what 50 does. I mean, Ja Rule, the whole beef, like, this is what he does. And he finds one thing. What's his other friend's name? Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
Junior. When he finds something, he picks at it. And he just keeps going because he knows, one, he's entertaining. He's already established himself in the hip-hop community, and he's still relevant because of his TV shows and movies.
It's part of his brand. I mean, he's a bully. He bullies people around. He trolls them, but also kind of bullies them around, and he rides with it.
Yeah, every dog had a day, though. You know what I'm saying?
He bullied me one day. I just looked at him, glazed eye. Like,
what?
50 did?
Yeah, he did.
Yo, tell that story real quick.
Right. Story
time. You be having weird
story. Right. Boy.
I was at the radio station one day, and 50 came in, and I was in the lobby. He came in the lobby, and we were all waiting on the elevator. And the elevator, he got on, and then as the doors closed, he bucked at me and was like, "G-Unit," and I was just like,
"What?
Why?" He had like 7 people with him.
Did you jump though? Did you jump?
Yes.
You didn't jump. All right.
He jumped.
But I had on a suit. I had on a suit. I was just going to work. We were on the same floor. When I saw Entourage come in and I saw him, and I was like, all right, I won't get on the elevator right now. But then when the doors closed, he had on like a tank top shirt, like, you know, muscular. I was like, but why bully me though? Why? What did I do? I just came to work today. That's all. Weird. Weird. But
that's the point of bullying. You do it just because. You do it because you can do it. That's what bullies do.
But I think when I watch 50 interviews, I think he's hilarious. I think he's he's crazy, but I think he's just like, he knows how to troll. He's the best at trolling. He's the absolute best at trolling.
What'd he do again?
G-Unit. But he bucked at me though.
No reason.
That's so funny.
Nah. I had a lot of radio stories about, you know, stuff.
But I think to land the plane though, at the end of the day, like 50 and the trolling and the bullying, we have a very real enemy that's alive that likes to bully and troll us, right?
Yeah.
Don't give him nothing to make a documentary of.
That's true.
Live a life that is upstanding before God.
There you go.
So therefore, they don't have nothing to spot the culture with.
Yeah.
Amen. So it's at the end of the day, it's what you doing.
Yeah. And don't ask a straight man to go shopping.
you know, some of this is Mace's fault too, right?
Oh, for real.
Yeah. Like back in the day, he wanted to sign Mace to G-Unit, and Puff was like, no. That's the start of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's fine.
So you asked the man to go shopping. He said no. Did you go get his girlfriend?
And that's what y'all do. That being all the songs.
That's wild.
Always by stealing somebody, girl.
That's wild.
Man. That is. I mean, but did he, from the documentary, we knew that was his whole, you know, motive is, I'm going to take your girl.
People so, like Drake before Drake did.
Mm-hmm.
And Trey Songz.
Yeah.
Mr.
Studio. Yeah, so we're talking about this situation where this gentleman who was on the Flagrant podcast talked about his wife in a way that we all kind of made the world think that she was this kind of upstanding woman, and then to find out she really treats him bad at the end of the day. So let's get into that conversation, because it was wild when we had our reaction to it.
Akash from the Flagrant podcast has been going viral for all the wrong reasons. Publicly, he consistently praised his wife's purity and talked about what a great partner she is.
My wife also hadn't had any sexual partners, so that helped us connect a lot more.
But then her clip started surfacing, which told a very different story.
Sometimes I get so painfully nostalgic for college, and I had a roster of guys that I would rotate through. So it's like,
You know why I think I have like a good marriage? I think it's because my husband's never here.
And as more and more clips come out, the reason that these clips keep exploding isn't just the drama. It's because they tap into a fear almost every man has. The fear of giving everything to a woman who barely respects you, which is a fear that Red Pill podcasters immediately jumped on. Okay, but what stood out to me was how his relationship and the Red Pill responses proved the same thing, that Christianity offers a far better solution to all of this, and not in the way that you're expecting. This whole thing goes back to when the Red Pill host Fresh and Fit went on the Flagrant podcast, and Akash called them out for having a childish view of relationships, basically telling them that they had no idea what they were talking about.
You guys have established yourselves as role models. From simps to pimps, and a lot of this is just childish.
But what makes this so ironic is that in other clips, Akash came down on Will Smith for the way Jada treated him and implied that he'd never tolerate that kind of disrespect himself.
I told my to shut up yesterday. Get on TikTok, yo. It's too much now. Cover your head.
So when he later painted his wife as pure, innocent, and respectful, people built a very specific picture of her in their minds. But then the clips started dropping and looked nothing like the woman that he described.
Oh, I actually don't cook and clean ever. Hi, my name is Jocelyn. I'm a stay-at-home wife, but I don't cook or clean because I don't feel like it. And my husband is a full-time stand-up comedian, and he buys me lots of nice things.
His money is our money, and my money is my money.
The clip started to show the exact fear that people try to avoid, a one-sided marriage where one person gets everything and the other person gets almost nothing back.
Okay, May the 4th is Akash's birthday, and every year I dread it because I have to be nice the whole day, and I have to get him something, and I have to also be nice and do like acts of kindness.
Twice.
Listen, I'm just used to being treated like a princess all day, every day, so that one day that I don't.
Oh, what torture.
Yeah, it's hard.
Some of you guys, I'd be like, Jocelyn, what did you do to contribute everything? I'm pushing buttons behind the scenes.
And then came the part that crossed into straight up humiliation. The way that she talked about her co-host's husband, Nav.
Akash is such a king. Like, everyone knows he's the best husband. And I don't often find men that measure up to him. And like, Nav completely measures up to him, if not more. And you haven't seen Nav yet, but wait till you see him. His body goes crazy. His face card always slays, never declines.
She also said multiple times how she wanted to sleep with Nav. And even worse, she said stuff like this on camera in front of Akash and Nav.
I'm a hustler who scams a little bit. I'm not
that
a scammer
was,
who hustles.
I'm not gonna lie, that was sexy. And, that's
and at a certain point, this isn't just content anymore. It's about what it does to a man's soul.
Yeah, I think... I hope that's not how she really is. I hope that she's putting on for the cameras and she's trolling too. Because my question is, where was she before he got his fame and they married, right? Like, was she somebody that was already kind of bubbling up as a social media influencer? Is she somebody that was, you know, going to college and doing something else, looking at a career? Like, all these different things that she could have been doing. And now all of a sudden it feels like, oh, the camera's on me? Well, let me just say something crazy. Let me get the views up. Let me get the clicks up. So I don't know if that's who she really is, because if it is, got some advice for Buddy, man.
That Gomer spear is real, huh?
Yeah. So, what? And so... we had a whole conversation about that too. That's
I had to think about that when I was like Gomer.
But to sit back and be like, you know, like if that's really what he's living, I feel sorry for him.
I don't.
You say you don't?
Do tell.
Yeah, I like to hear that.
Man, if a woman acting like that, she ain't just start doing that. So
that's what I thought.
We just see a lot of times. You see, she's a beautiful woman. He saw the woman. He was so enamored by her beauty, he probably tolerated a lot of stuff that he should not have tolerated. He probably had low self-esteem. And so he finds his identity in his platform and the woman that he has. And so he comes on these platforms and he portrays his life to be a certain thing that it actually isn't. And now she want to open up her mouth and just tell what it's really like. When a woman say, I was in college and I had a roster of men and how I missed that, like, and you talking about how pure, how wholesome she is, if a woman rotating two dudes like that, You know what you got. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to hide that. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have any kind of street sense or any kind of discernment whatsoever, like, the way she's talking and stuff, like, you can't tell me all of a sudden she woke up and then she just started talking like this. Like,
well, I feel like it's both of them. I think they both are trolls because he said, "I tell my woman what to say. I tell her to shut up." I was telling her to shut up the other day. And it's like you guys are both disrespecting each other on these cameras. Either you're very toxic and the relationship is just that bad and on both sides, or one of you are, or you all came together and said, "Hey, let's do this."
No, I don't feel sorry for him. He came out and said, "I just told my B that shut up yesterday." Like, you talking that cash money like you just, you know what I'm saying, like you got it like that. So when she come out and start saying this and that, it's like, I don't feel sorry for you. Either both of y'all really lost, you know what I'm saying, or you made a decision based off of something you should not have made a decision off of. This is the consequences of it. I don't feel sorry for you.
Mm. Let's get to the question, though. Is it every man's fear that a woman would disrespect him after he has either pledged his life to her, joined in covenant with her, or, you know, started a life? I believe so.
Yep.
I believe so. But I was wondering, too, if this was something that we know as the church, like, this is definitely something. But the world feels it, too, I believe.
Definitely something. What are you referencing? You say this is definitely something.
Oh, the church. We know that's inappropriate behavior from the church standpoint.
So the question the world, is, do every man fear a woman would lose respect for him and start acting like that, you said?
Yeah.
I ain't never had that fear.
Yeah, the question that the moderator, I guess, or the host in the clip, he said the fear is that every man has is that they give everything to a woman, like, mm-hmm. and they won't get anything in return. And that was the question I asked before. I was like, is that true? Like, is mm-hmm. that a
it's
universal
not so much.
Fear for men?
I think that comes down. I think they're talking about love language in this situation, right? If you have a certain love language that you know your spouse is more accepting of, like that's what they need. They need words of affirmation. They need physical touch. They need that sort of thing. I think those are the areas where people are like, okay, if I'm doing your love language, which is acts of service, if I'm serving you and doing XYZ, and then you won't even return back to me what you know that I need, I think that's what that might.
I just don't know, man. I just feel like this stuff you're gonna know before you get to that. I just think, like, what kind of character is she showing? Is she showing you to make you want to marry her in the first place?
Right.
I'm like, if she takes such a drastic turn to where, oh yeah, this and that, and then all of a sudden you get married and it just goes so drastic. Now she don't respect you. Now she don't want to do, like.
Well, I think that goes both ways. I think that comes with the different things that come up in a marriage. Mm-hmm. I think when I know personally brothers in Christ who said the same thing about when their wife makes more money. When they start say, I want to do this and I want to do that, and you don't do this and you don't do that. I've heard that. I've heard guys do the same. I've heard women say the same thing about men. Men come in, they were making $60,000. Now they're making over $100,000, and then they start acting brand new.
I think it's just boiling out. That's just insecurity in my mind. Like, I don't care. If I know what a woman make more money than me, like, God bless. Like, I'm still a man at the end of the day.
But does she see that?
And if she don't, we're going to have some discussions. You know what I'm saying?
And like, I think that's the problem.
But I'm not going to let it make me just, I don't know. I just feel like beforehand, like, even with money, whatever the money looks like or whatever, I feel like it should be a certain amount of due diligence done to see what kind of character somebody has. Especially, hopefully, as believers, we're talking about a woman of God here.
Sure.
So you got a man of God and a woman of God. If she was truly able to do that and just shift gears on you like that, that's just weird.
And I think a lot of times it's a matter of discernment. So when you first start courting somebody, you can't just be blind to who they are, what they say. Like, you gotta have you gotta be prayerful, but you also have to have your eyes open and apply some wisdom to, okay, how does this person act in this situation? Now, people can put on, and people can change over time or get the wrong influences. Like, things happen. There are people who missed it, not because they weren't paying attention, but because things just change. I mean, people can get, we can all get caught off guard. In general, though, you got to have some discernment in those situations. Yeah. Even somebody, I got three sons. I don't want them to be so sheltered that they can't peep game, right? Like, they can't look at somebody and say, hold up. I still got to be wise as a Christian man to understand when somebody's being deceptive.
As a man, we go out and we see a certain woman and she carrying herself a certain kind of way. We know what we dealing with, like a woman. Like, if you see a man portrayed, for real, am I lying?
No,
you see a man, he carry himself a certain kind of way, the way he speak, the way he dress, he got certain mannerisms. You looking like, oh, okay, I know what's up. Like, so it's like,
that's enough to get you in the door, because that's the part that can confuse you, which is why discernment is important, because that's surface level. So it's like you can have a totally wrong heart but be presenting well and be presenting something else. But one thing I love is scripture says perfect love casts out all fear. So we have to allow God to do the thing. We have to allow God, like you said, the discernment to be prayerful and sit this thing before God, because you can't fool him. You can fool me for 3 months, but we also have to be able to sit in the stillness, and God is not going to let you end up with the wrong person. But a lot of times, if we are trying to filter through our own brokenness, and we are trying to find somebody to fill voice that only God can fill, you will end up with the wrong person. You will get duped. Somebody will play you.
And the Bible also says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So, like, at some point, like, whatever is in here is going to come out. And you can't just want to get married so bad for the wrong reason, because you're lonely, you want to have sex, you want that you've overlooked it. Like, you got to take your time.
And here's what brothers do, too. Sometimes you just got to let people be them. Sometimes when you're courting somebody, you're giving them the answers that you want them. Sometimes let them feel like they're free to say what they feel. Right. That way they don't know what you're expecting. They're going to open up and just be who they are. But sometimes we like to control, say this, do this. Yeah. You don't even know who you're getting, because you don't control everything they say.
Right. And that's how we got to this deep conversation on our call when we planned this conversation, because I was in something where I'd said, okay, there's a person who I was dating at one time. And she started to pick apart all the things she didn't like. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that. I'm glad you're telling me so that I know how to, you know, proceed. But in that moment, I was like, yep, this ain't right. This ain't the one. So I felt like that's kind of a lot of where, you know, that conversation comes from. But I will say this. I do know brothers in Christ, sisters in Christ, that have ended their marriages because they felt disrespected, or they felt the respect wasn't there. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, man. I think the question goes to, like, as a man, how far are you willing to go for the disrespect? Because some men may be like, let's go to counseling. Some men may be like, let's try this so we can get it right. But, like, how far is it? Because, I mean, scripturally, nobody's getting abused. Nobody, you know what I mean? So it's not like you can just cut it off. But at the same time, how far as a man are you willing to go to continue to get disrespected when somebody is publicly disrespecting you, not even privately? That's like publicly disrespecting you. And when we say disrespect, meaning like going on podcasts and saying like, such and such is hotter than my husband. Like, it's like, as a man, you like, what? Like, you know what I'm saying? And I think sometimes we have to ask those questions, because I think their newest episode of their podcast, they interview both of them. And he's still sticking around. He's still, like, hanging around with her. He's still rocking with her.
That's why I say I think it's a conspiracy with the – I think it's cooked up, because first of all, she's telling her podcast host about her husband, right? Yeah. Wasn't that the other girl's husband right in front of her?
Yeah.
And she's like, your husband is this, your husband is that, your husband – you know, that's when you got to check somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody's not going to sit up here and just tell me how attractive my wife is. Man, your wife's so curvy, bro. She just and I'm not going to check you on it, right? Like,
you may say thank you first time, and then...
No, you're not going to say thank you.
Somebody said, man, you got a beautiful family, man. Beautiful wife. Yeah. Like, thank you.
That's different.
We say, yeah, your wife's so curvy, man. She got...
Yeah, you going into detail, bro.
Also, the details is the problem versus, like...
Because in that moment...
You got a beautiful woman.
Yeah, because in that moment, she should have known, like... Her co-host or whoever, her friend, should have known, like, in this moment, I could lose my husband to you. Based on what you're saying. Not to say that the husband, she's going to lose her, because she might be confident in knowing that she's not going to lose her husband. But, man, my husband might be tried by you. That's the situation.
So I don't know that it was clarified in the video that that was that other girl's husband.
It was.
I think they didn't say that in the video, though.
She said she was looking at the girl face to face, and she was just like, let me tell you, she was like, there's not many men. She's like, my husband is great. Everybody knows that. But your husband or Nav or whatever, he's this, he's that, he's this.
Okay, I didn't hear the husband piece. I just thought she was the co-host, and then, like, he was there. Yeah, okay, no, okay. I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, so that part to me is like, I think they're cooking this up.
Crazy. She seemed like she...
And when they get home, they look at the checks and be like, that video brought in.
But there's people who go through something like, even if they're cooking it up, there's people who are going through something like that. And one of my questions too is, obviously that was disrespectful, but I think brothers too have to watch out for being so prideful that we think stuff is disrespect, that we really do need to say, all right, you know, I got to check myself too, because I can be so prideful or insecure that I take things that don't necessarily have to be disrespect as that from my standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also the mindset too. I think we can hear one thing and feel something else, right? Or we can feel something and then hear another, and then it can be completely off.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I'm just in shock. That's all.
You're in shock.
Because I missed that part about it being her husband, and I don't understand how she was just sitting there like jokey. Because it seemed very much like, oh, I'm just a co-host laughing at this, you know, other person like saying crazy things.
Right.
Not
and she
like
did it in front of her husband too, because she was just like, I'm a hustler, and she was like, oh, that's sexy. Okay.
But here's another question.
That's so
strange. I mean, not a question. Here's another statement. Mm-hmm. We're thinking about people who are non-believers. From a believer's perspective, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I think,
I mean by that is, no. I think,
yeah,
no,
I
what, no,
say,
no, 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 I'm serious. What we talking about? A standard? Like, yo, man, you should have a standard. These are people that don't know Jesus.
If I didn't believe,
yeah, me
and you
either,
in front of me,
if you
in front of me telling me how good my wife looking, how you gonna take her all through there?
No, get what I'm saying.
Like,
believe
for
or
real.
Not, you
no,
got
no,
to see
I'm
me.
I'm not talking about what.
Like right now, as a believer in Christ, you gonna have to see me.
No, I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the mentality of the person thinking the way this young lady has been thinking. We can't. We're holding these people, even her husband, to a standard that's not even a. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're thinking, he's thinking like, he feeling, I'm sure he feels humiliated, but I'm sure, I'm sure that, but at the same time, it's like, the standard that we have and the way God has for us, we want to see people get it, but I think at the same time, we don't know that people without Jesus can do that. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I hear you, but I still feel like I would have looked at her like, you trying to die today?
Yeah, believe it or not, like, that would make it worse. If I'm not a believer, I might sock you right then. You
know? Right, like, this covenant, baby.
It's a grace of God. It's saving you.
Because how are you this happy-go-lucky about her saying that about your That's why I think they lying.
That's
very true. They got to be lying, because how can you talk about how noble and of noble character your wife is, and then you say, I tell that bee to shut the F up? Why would you even treat someone noble and sweet like that? Y'all lying.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Y'all lying.
That's wild.
But I will say, I was just surprised to hear the fear that we were talking about earlier of that being a man's fear. Because that, I think I mentioned on our call, like, that has never been anything that I've ever heard before.
Wait, what?
The fear of a man being, like, afraid for a woman, like, to give everything to a woman and then her not to give anything back. I didn't know this was even a...
I don't necessarily think that I look at it that way. I think when it says, when you're talking about give something to a woman, I think it's an emotion, like give your heart. You give your heart to somebody and then they don't, you know, show the same love and respect to you back.
Yeah, but a wise man counts the cost.
Yeah.
That's why you got to make sure you do your due diligence before you give your heart away.
Thank you, Justin, for coming in.
Yeah, man.
We appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. This was a great conversation.
Yeah.
I do a good job.
Definitely would love to have you come back. You know, just get with Camille. Yeah, get with Camille. What y'all say something?
No.
But get with Camille, sure. And we would love to have you come back. Again, tell everybody where they can find the book and how they can support you on social media.
Yeah, you can go to the bookstore or Amazon. It's Don't Let Nobody Turn You Around, How the Black Church's Public Witness Leads Us Out of the Culture War. And it's basically just saying how we should respond based on Christian principles to this moment of polarization.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah. We talked to someone on your team that's going to get us copies of the book.
Yeah,
thank
we got
you for that.
We got you.
Yeah, appreciate that.
We'll have to come back and talk about it. But this was a great, great conversation. I appreciate what y'all are doing, and certainly a fan.